Sandy, could you tell us a little bit about your background in law enforcement and how you became a part of the Black Swan Group family?
Certainly. So I started out with the City of Alexandria Police Department forever ago, it seems like now. Back in 1989, I'm probably aging myself, but I was there for 23 years, spent 10 years as a hostage crisis negotiator, and I was what they call a career detective. So 19 years in the detectives unit out of my 23 years. I came to the Black Swan Group initially in 2011. I met Chris through Derek, and they had me do a few things for them back then. And then I ended up leaving the police department due to an injury, so not my choice, but I left there. I worked off and on for the Black Swan Group up until last year, and I came full time with them back in July of last year. And I'm so happy to be here, and I'm so excited to be on Fireside.
So I got a question for you. People in a group refer to you as Michelle.
Oh no. Yes. I'm trying to be Luann Johnson instead, but it keeps coming back to Michelle Pfeiffer. So I taught high school for 6 years, and the students were afraid of me. I think it's just because I had a law enforcement background, but there were two young ladies that chose to fight in front of my classroom, and it didn't go so well for them. And I jumped in and had to go hands-on a little bit, and some of my kids were taping it, and so it went all around the school, and it was the hot topic for probably a week around the school. And so when I came to the Black Swan Group, Chris and Chelsea both got a hold of that information and said that it reminded them of the movie Dangerous Minds, which I had never seen until after you said that to me. And then I went and watched it, and I'm like, okay, I can be Luann Johnson. You know, she's pretty tough. I can be her. I don't know if I can pull off Michelle Pfeiffer, but I can be Luann Johnson all day long.
Very good. Yes, indeed. Everybody respects Sandy for good reason.
Oh, me.
And we're so excited to have you on board with the team. So stepping into today's topic, could you briefly explain the Fab Five skills for females and why they are great skills to master, especially for women when we're negotiating?
Okay, certainly. The Fab Five skills are those five skills that we figured out were the best for women to use. They play to women's intuitive abilities. Three of them are part of our level one 9 core skills in the introductory to the Black Swan method. Those are labels, mirrors, and summary. And then two are from skill levels 2 and 3, a little bit higher, and those are no oriented questions and accusations audits. And there are very specific ways that women can use each of these five skills to aid them in becoming better, not only at negotiating, but handling tough conversations.
Wait a minute, wait a minute. Hold it. Are you trying to say that some of the more advanced skills the women are automatically better at from the very beginning? Is that what you're trying to contend here?
I'm not saying that they're better at using the skills. They are just the best ones for women to use because they do kind of play to the strengths that women have as far as listening and kind of gearing a conversation in the right way and getting people to respond to them. And especially with accusations audits, with mitigating negatives that some people tend to carry into the conversation when it comes to negotiating with women, especially.
Absolutely. And so, as they are natural skills that women just have, could you give us some example scenarios of low stakes negotiation practice that we could utilize in our daily lives? So, I know on our previous conversation yesterday with Troy, he said that a very easy low stakes negotiation practice is ordering a drink from Starbucks. And if you just have a very polite conversation with your barista, it could potentially change the way of their day, like how their day went. So, could you give us some other practice scenarios that we could utilize?
Absolutely. I would say in any everyday conversation, actually. My favorite is to use it when I go to the grocery store, talking to the cashier. Those people are so, you know, sometimes overworked. They're there for long hours. They're standing all this time. And I it bothers me when I see the person in front of me kind of disregard them and just kind of act like they're not really there. They pay them, they take the receipt and run away. There's no, you know, conversation. So I found that when I get to the front of the line, if I just use a simple label, depending on the dynamic that's happening at the store at the time, you can say, seems like you're having a really busy day. And you'd be shocked at the response that you get. When they realize that someone is actually going to interact with them and have a human conversation, they become very open and very friendly. And it really does change their whole outlook for the day. Same thing can be said for any phone conversations that you have. The way I like to practice the most, I think, is with family, family and friends. So if you have children, especially, it's great to practice on this with children. If you have a four-year-old who doesn't want to pick up their toys, you can, you know, use a simple accusations audit or a label to kind of get them to buy into the fact that picking up their toys is going to be this wonderful thing. It's great with teenagers too, especially because if you have a teenager who goes to school and they come home and you say, hey, how was your day? First thing they're going to say is, fine, it was fine. But if you change that around just a little bit and you say, well, it seems like you had a pretty hard day at school today. And if they had a hard day, then they'll be more willing to talk to you about it because you didn't use one of those question words, those buzz words of who, what, where, when, how, whatever. Any of those question words, teenagers automatically kind of put up a wall against that. But if you use that simple label, it's a very good way to engage them without asking a question, and you'll find that you'll actually get them to respond to you. Even if you say it was a hard day and it wasn't a hard day, they'll correct you. Because, you know, one of our laws of negotiation gravity, the desire to correct is irresistible. So they'll correct you. And when they correct you, they're going to give you the proper information about how their day actually went. So you can get a lot of information just by using a label instead of asking questions.
Wow. There were so many gems in that one statement. Everyone was able to catch it. So Sandy, just speaking personally, which of the Fab Five skills is your favorite to use and why?
I love them all for very different reasons, but, my motto is when in doubt, label it out. So I'm going to say label is probably my go-to. I love a good summary, and an accusations audit can be used, to great effect anytime, really. But label for me is the one that I always can go to because there's always something that you can label there. It might be the dynamic. It might be the circumstances. It could be the emotion on the other side. There are so many different things.
Specifically labeling.
I'm sorry.
What is the
Shay, I can't hear you.
Or can you hear me now?
Okay. Try now. I don't know what was happening there. And now I don't hear you again. Why is this? I'm not getting anything, guys.
Shay's still struggling. I can see on her side she's still struggling with a little bit back and forth. So while she's working on getting back in, I would like to point out to those of you that are in the audience, first of all, I think this fireside stuff is really cool. And what I just experimented with was I tweeted out that I was on here with Sandy. So if you get the chance and you like the stuff that Sandy's talking about, you know, do the share with the world thing on this app, which I think is really cool. And I'm still learning this. I'm pretty much a Fred Flintstone. So I figure if I could do it, everybody else here can do it with no problem. All right.
Yes. Shay, can you hear me, Chris?
I can hear you.
Oh,
yes.
Awesome. Yes. Okay,
you're the voice of my, you're the voice of my head.
Oh my goodness. That's cool, actually. I'm the voice in Chris Voss's head. That's pretty amazing.
So what about the Chinese? Does this stuff work with Chinese?
Culturally, it works the same. You might have to play around with the actual structure of your words, depending on the language that you're in. I have found in dealing with some of my coaching clients, especially European clients and German in particular, they've had a little bit of trouble with the structure of the words, but culturally, the idea of tactical empathy works the same. So you have police departments all over the world that are using this in crisis negotiations, and it's working exactly as it works here. But you might have to work out a little bit of language issue with structure.
All right. Well, very good. And accusations audits, and you're saying that the women are a little bit more suited for that some. What do you mean by that?
Sometimes with women, they have a strong ability to listen very deeply. And that plays into a lot of the way we use our skills. So if you want to get to a good label, or if you want to get to a deep summary, listening is the first key to that. And women are natural listeners. I'm not sure where that comes from or why, but in my travels, I have found that dealing with women, they tend to listen and soak in what I'm saying multiple things at a time. And that's great for using those skills where you have to have that information to be able to use the skills, such as doing a deep dive label or giving a good summary.
All right, cool. That helps. That helps a lot. And the interesting thing about women being able to hear sort of several things at the same time. I think we've got a question here from Shannon. So, Shannon, if you unmute and fire away at Sandy.
Hey, Sandy. Thank you, Chris and Shay and Kayla, for having us today. I am wondering if you can shed some light, Sandy, on as a woman in the workplace. I found that a lot of times if there's a tough situation and your tone stays good, but you're still dealing with in a tough manner, that as a woman you can come across and really be labeled as being bitchy, right, instead of just tough, where a guy with the same tone in the same situation would just be, you know, everybody would just say, hey, he did a great job, you know, he took authority or whatever. And I'm just wondering if you have any recommendations on how to avoid that label and still come across well.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I actually hear this quite often. Women say something that when it comes out of their mouths, for whatever reason, it seems more assertive. But when a man says it, it seems to be taken okay. If you're controlling your tone, which it sounds like you're doing a good job of controlling the tone, a lot of times it's the structure that you're using. With the skill that you're using, make sure you're using the right structure. So if you're using a label, or if you're trying to find out information, instead of asking a direct question, use that label with a nice tone. It might get you a little bit further. If you're having the overall problem, say, in a meeting or in a negotiation or in a tough conversation, try using an accusations audit first and mitigate that negative. You can say, you're probably going to think what I'm saying is very assertive. Pause for a few seconds, and then say what you're going to say. Because if you put out there, they may think you're being assertive. You're demonstrating that you understand that they have that thought process going on in their mind. And when you do that, you mitigate it. You clear it from their mind. So they can't come back in a few minutes and say, you're being too assertive or you're being bitchy, because you pretty much told them up front you thought they were going to think that anyway. So it mitigates that thought, keeps them from using that against you later in the conversation. So a lot of women that I've spoken with have had this issue. And when I suggested to use the accusations audit before they speak, it actually gave them a little bit of a leg up, and they found that people were not considering them quite as assertive because they were putting it out there first.
Thank you. That was really helpful. I do have one other question, if it's okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
What is your biggest recommendation for helping with times when you have tone issues?
Okay, tone is something that you deal with from the day you're born, I think. I remember when I was younger, my mom saying, watch your tone of voice. And I would think, I don't have a tone. And when I look back on it now, I'm thinking to myself, oh, I so had a tone. When I was that teenager, I definitely had a tone. So trying to get a hold of your tone of voice is something that takes a little bit of practice, especially if you're trying to go into that late night FM DJ voice, especially if you've listened to Chris do the voice on the masterclass, because the tone of Chris's voice, when he goes down into the late night FM DJ voice, it has a whispery quality to it. And as a woman, you want to avoid that whispery quality. It sends the wrong message. So instead, what you need to concentrate on is kind of practicing with your diaphragm. And especially when you're in a stressful situation, because if you sit up straight and you elongate your diaphragm and you tilt your chin up just a little bit, your voice tends to get a little bit higher. And I'm doing it right now as we talk, if you can tell, your voice gets a little bit higher. So when you want to go down into that late night FM DJ voice, you want to shrink down into your stomach a little bit and lower your chin, and your voice is naturally going to drop a few octaves. And if you notice, that's what I just did. So to get into that late night FM DJ voice, drop your chin, let your body fall down relaxed, and then slow down your rate of speech. And that's the way you're actually going to get to the late night FM DJ voice that is an appropriate place for women to be with it. Now, if while you're doing this late night FM DJ voice, you get triggered a little bit, you just have to remember to maybe tighten your core, because if you tighten your core, your abdominal muscles, it'll keep you hunched forward just a little bit, which will help you control that tone and keep it down in a lower octave.
Thank you so much. That was excellent.
Thank you. What else do we have, Shay? And I can't
hear me now.
I can hear you now. Yes. There
Perfect.
You go.
Perfect. All right. Let's see. If you have any questions, feel free to put them in the chat. And the way that you would do that is you would click the love emoji with the react. Choose an emoji and then input your question.
Let me just remind everybody, I talked about earlier about low stakes conversation, low stakes scenarios. So I want to point out that anytime the words I want or I need are in your mind, or the person that's across from you, whatever the situation is, you're actually in a negotiation. So if your 4-year-old wants dessert before dinner, you're in a negotiation. If your 13-year-old wants to go up to a party on Friday night and you're trying to figure that out, you're actually in a negotiation, because they want something. It's not only what you want or what you need, it's the other side wanting or needing something from you also. So anytime anything like that happens, it's appropriate to use the Black Swan skills to get to some kind of resolution through tactical empathy, which will be faster and better and more positive for everyone.
Absolutely. We have a question from Amber Katrina. Amber, I'm going to invite you on the stage.
Amber, if you could unmute. There you go.
Okay.
Hi.
Hi, I'm very pleased to meet you. I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
So practically, as a survivor of narcissistic abuse, bullying, and so many other forms of abuse I don't need to be getting into right now, I'm probably going to come across like a negative toad here. I'm finding it kind of hard to be using the accusations audits in a way that doesn't come across too apologetic. And okay, that's the first part. And the second part is, I do love using accusations audits as I call it narc bait. Like, mm-hmm. I throw out a perceived weakness. For example, one of my favorite ones is, you probably think I'm stupid. Because that gets narcissists to reveal themselves pretty quickly. Because, like, the ones who immediately jump on that, they're like a sharks who smell blood. I already know who I'm dealing with. And I usually can just, like, decide how to act with that person. However, I'm finding that the real problem I'm having is not becoming too apologetic, where you turn into a doormat.
Right. So I hear this often from women, and in our Women's Power Hour that we do every other month, I have a lot of people that say to me, you know, I don't want to apologize. I don't want to say I'm sorry. Your tone of voice when you say that I'm sorry really means everything. And by the way, you used a nice accusations audit there at the beginning when you said, I'm probably going to be seen as a whatever you said. That's a good accusations audit. When you said that, I immediately noticed your tone and the way your voice intonation went when you said that. You were like, I'm probably going to be seen. You kind of did it like that. Amend that tone just a little bit and just say, I'm probably going to be, just speak up and own it. So when you say, I'm sorry, instead of saying, I'm sorry, with your tone kind of going down and like, I'm defeated, I'm, you know, I'm below, I'm less than, speak up when you say that. I'm sorry. And let it go like that. So your tone really has everything to do with controlling how people take an apology from you. And I understand exactly what you're saying with bullying behavior and things like that. Just practice sitting up straight, like I said before, with your tone of voice, put your chin up and then say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And, you know, go forward from there. It does make a big difference. And an apology, yes, people say an apology should be heartfelt and things like that. When you've done something that you need to apologize for, then by all means, do that heartfelt, I'm really sorry apology. But if you're putting it out there to kind of introduce an accusations audit, you want to speak up about it a little bit more, raise your chin and speak out a little bit prouder about it, I guess is the way I'm putting it, if that makes any sense.
So if I say, I'm sorry, I'm probably going to come across like a negative toad right now.
Yes, that was really good.
Cool. That was really Thank good. You.
Yeah. Does that make sense then? I'm so happy that helps. Yeah, I noticed that right off the bat when you said that, Amber. Yep, I did.
I changed my posture. Like I'm kind of crouched over here because I'm hosting a Zoom call for other people to be listening in who have not been approved by the app yet and asking the questions. That's what I did yesterday as well. So I'm kind of crouched over because it's kind of difficult from the phone to the call. And right. So I changed my posture when you said that. And yes, it really did make all the difference.
It does make a difference. So I want to thank you also for sharing this through Zoom so other people can hear it. That's amazing. That's just thank you so much for doing that. And yes, posture does have a great, great big effect on your tone. So anyone who's having tone issues, if you really practice that posture, it does make a difference.
Right. Thank you so much.
Certainly.
For now.
Sandy, that is some awesome stuff. Like I tell you, I need to listen to you teach more. I'm tweeting out these pearls of wisdom that you were sharing as we're speaking. This is really cool. I'm having the best.
Awesome. Thank you. What else do we have? Anybody else have a question they want to have answered by Chris, by me, by anybody?
So Sandy, I wonder if the people who have joined into this conversation, they probably, if they're beginner negotiators, they think that, oh, negotiation is more about salary or professional instances. Mm-hmm. Could you talk more about the personal everyday negotiation situations that we could be in?
Yes, pretty much you're negotiating all the time if you want or need anything. So no matter what situation that you're in, if you find yourself speaking out because you want or need something, you're actually in a negotiation. And these skills are not just for negotiating. These are, you know, personal skills. These are skills that will help you no matter what you're doing. The best way to get to anything is through tactical empathy. So using especially labels and mirrors, if you practice those two skills, you're going to be amazed at how significantly different your interactions on a daily basis are going to be, because you can get a lot of information out of someone by using a label and putting an upward inflection on the end of it. So it's like a question without asking a question, because then people don't get defensive when you do that. So any conversation that you have, especially when you're trying to gather any kind of information, practice using a label with that upward inflection, so it comes across as a label, but it's got a question behind it and people are more willing to answer it. So definitely practice the tone of voice with that upward inflection. So you know, so people realize you want an answer to that label that you just gave them. So that's what we call an asking label.
And how much your experience as a hostage negotiator in tonality, what's the translation of the tonality from that experience to the tonality in just business and everyday negotiations? What's been your experience?
My experience with that is my everyday interactions, I feel like I get to use the accommodator voice more often. In other words, that playful, friendly voice, I get to use that more often on a daily basis when I'm not in the middle of a hostage negotiation. Through the police department and doing those negotiations, I found myself most often in the analyst voice, the serious, calming, slow cadence, because a lot of times the person you're dealing with on the other end of the phone in a hostage negotiation, their emotions are extremely high. And so in order to bring down their emotions, the analyst voice is the best to use. And so I found myself in that voice more than any other voice, you know, at the police department. The great thing about being with the Black Swan Group now and dealing with people who are not in a hostage crisis situation is that I actually get to use that accommodator voice, and I get to practice the skills in that playful, friendly voice instead of always feeling like I have to stay in that lower octave. That's the biggest difference for me.
Cool. Very cool. Thank you. I think we got Tammy on stage here. Tammy.
Yes, Tammy, if you could unmute yourself, you can ask your question.
Yeah, it's more just a conversation starter. Hi, guys, Sandy and Chris and the whole team over there. Shay, this is great. I love that you're supporting women on how to negotiate. It's so important. I had written a book, A Modern Day Guide for Business and Relationships for Women. And, you know, one of the things is I acknowledge all my shit and insecurities. But one of the tips that I talk about in the book is how women have such an advantage being empathetic, and we're willing to be vulnerable where men really struggle with that. And I find if women can use that natural intuition to get men to be more vulnerable, they instantly earn the trust from men. And it's such a great advantage. And so maybe to think of how to approach that. I mean, thinking about this conversation, I sometimes do labeling or I ask questions. Like if I can get them to talk about their family, I could say, that might be really stressful for all the travel you have to do to balance your home and work life. Men never going to talk about the realities of life. And there's a real strength in that.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. Empathy is easier for women. I think it's because since the dawn of time, the men have been the strong, you know, go out and their contribution essentially to family life and everyday living was to go out and be the hunters and be the more forceful, strong individual. And so women, because they weren't seen as the stronger sex, have always had to use empathy to kind of get what they want or get people to listen to them or get people to engage with them. So empathy essentially has been since the dawn of time, the great equalizer between men and women. And how women can use that is exactly how you said, Tammy. I love the way you put it. You use empathy. I mean, not just with men, but with anybody, but with men in particular who don't like to show their sensitive side. Sometimes they're so afraid they're going to be seen as weak. If you address it and you label something like that, that allows them to give you information because they realize that you want to hear that, it will actually bring them down to a more vulnerable state or position. So you're absolutely correct with that. Chris, yes. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, Chris, do you have any thoughts? Or you guys have any tips for other women on how to open up the vulnerable state in men? I think we understand how to open up that vulnerable state with women and women instinctually. Chris, do you have any thoughts on that too?
Well, you know, sometimes as a gender reaction towards, sometimes as a type reaction. And when I react to the word vulnerable, I'm a natural born assertive. And so I don't know if I'm reacting as assertive or as I'm a man. But, you know, either one, I have this nonsense going on in my head where my reaction is like, I'm not vulnerable, but I'll be honest. And so when I, you know, for me, just being honest is like, honestly, I'm scared. You know, if I'm being honest, I'm admitting to an emotion. And or say, you know, I'm concerned, I'm upset, I'm, you know, I'm on pins and needles, you know, I will, you know, assertively say that. And then people are like, oh, you're being so vulnerable. And I'm thinking like, I'm not, how dare you say I'm vulnerable? So I don't know if it's me as a man reacting to that or whether it's my natural born assertive type. Now I know Sandy's an assertive also.
Yes.
So I'd be interested in her two cents on that particular take.
I feel the same way you do, Chris, actually. I don't like the word vulnerable, and maybe it is a type thing, because as an assertive, if someone were to point out to me that I was being vulnerable, I would immediately feel like I needed to, you know, puff my chest out and say, I'm not vulnerable. So I have that same feeling also. So maybe it is more of a type thing as opposed to men and women. I think if you have someone who is more of an accommodator, they're going to be more likely to share a vulnerability with you. An analyst is not going to like that. They're not going to like to share that vulnerability either. And I know we have Derek, who's an analyst, and he's not one that likes to be have anything vulnerable pointed out about him either. So it may be a type thing, not so much a male female thing.
Yeah, interesting, because I stay away from the word vulnerable. I just don't use the word vulnerable. I just,
right.
You know, just that word makes people run. I just go for being empathetic.
Yes.
To their environment. Yeah. Or what's going on. If I can get them there, I know I earn trust, but I do stay away from the word vulnerable. 100%.
Right. Well, in labeling the dynamic of whatever you see with whoever you're dealing with, if you see or recognize a certain dynamic of them having a difficult time with something, you can use a label to address that. It seems like this is really disturbing for you. Might come off a little bit better, because they'll be more likely to say, yeah, this is a little disturbing. So, you know, being mindful of the language that you use probably is very smart. So what is the name of your book? I want to go read this.
Thank you. It's called From C-Student to the C-Suite. And it just shows that you don't need to be perfect to be successful. And
awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to go check that out. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandy.
I love everything you're saying. It's kind of very on brand with us, actually.
Oh, you'll like it, because it's got a major sense of humor. So,
perfect. I love it.
If you like to laugh.
Yep.
It. It's very, it has a lot of humor to it. At my own expense, don't get me wrong.
Hey, that's the best way to do it. That way no one can say that you're making fun of them, right? You make fun of yourself, it comes across a little better.
I'm making fun of myself, yes.
There you go.
All right. Thank you, Tammy. We also have another question. Troy, if you would like to be on stage, I'm going to invite you on stage.
Hey, everyone. Hi. Thank you for bringing me on stage. I did have a question. It's an interesting conversation. I think, Sandy, you had answered it somewhat. I had went to a predominantly women's graduate school, and, you know, earlier or later in my age, and it made me realize how much, you know, as a man, I didn't really know about the world of how women looked at it from their lenses as far as the women that I met, right? Which was very, very appealing to me, because I thought I was this modern man. When I found out after being there for 3 years that I was just another caveman walking around, dragging the claws on the ground, right? You know what I mean? So, you know, this is a really interesting conversation. From that point on, I always tried to make it my mission on how I can be supportive of women in negotiations or any place where they may feel marginalized when men are monopolizing the conversation, the negotiations. I feel okay with confronting the men in a way that's proper and correct. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, should I keep doing that? Because I don't want to stop doing that. I think that's my mission to some degree. But also, as being a very big, strong male, physically, and being through a lot of things which I would call challenging to some as far as building, excuse me, resilience. I like the word vulnerable because for me to be vulnerable, it makes me disarming. So I don't know if that's a question or a statement, but I just want to
throw that out there. That makes sense. Yeah, yes. That makes perfect sense. I would say continue supporting women, especially in a negotiation scenario, because a lot of times what happens is they're the voice that doesn't get heard in the room. So I would say practice getting them to have their voice be heard, not necessarily confronting the other people in the room to listen to them, because that's kind of coming to their rescue, damsel in distress. And some women don't like that. Someone would rather you say, hey, so-and-so, it seems like you have something to say that might be pertinent to this issue, and give them the floor. So if you see them not being able to speak in the room, being cut off in a meeting, not being heard, open up the door for them to speak for themselves. Don't confront the other side and try to say, hey, you need to listen to her. Just say, hey, it seems like you have something to say, and let them do it themselves. That way you're not rescuing them. They're not feeling like a damsel in distress, because a lot of women really take that negatively. They want to be the one who speaks up for themselves, but sometimes they need a little help with the door opening up, especially if it's a room full of men. So definitely give them that space to say what they need to say.
Hey, I really love the way you put that. So that's giving me a tool, because I want to be like, hey, you know what I mean? But I want to learn how to soften my approach. So right. I really appreciate it, because like emotions get involved based on the experiences that have been shared with me by women on how they got, you know, cut down at the knees in different scenarios. So I really appreciate right. that, Sandy. Thank you very much.
Certainly. Thanks for the question.
Thanks, Troy. Next we have Victoria. Victoria, if you could unmute yourself and ask Sandy a question.
Hi, thank you so much for having me up. Thank you for hosting this conversation yesterday, today. It's absolutely really insightful, and I really appreciate it. I was thinking, and it was great that Troy used the word disarm, because I was thinking that in a negotiation, when you're labeling, it's a sense of I'm disarming them. I'm calling the elephant in the room. I'm just saying, you know, I'm going to do this, or I'm going to be assertive, whatever that label is, or I see you as something, can we talk about it? And forgive me, I'm not sure if I'm paraphrasing correctly. But my mm-hmm. question is that, do you see a difference between negotiating and trying to disarm versus when you're in a debate and you know clearly you want to win the argument? Do you see both of those skills as still a form of negotiating? And how would you use your negotiating skills in a debate? And is there a difference?
Sometimes I find if someone wants to debate with me, I will let them speak first, because a lot of times people who want to argue want to debate. If you give them the space to get it all out right up front, it's a lot easier to handle. It's a lot easier to deal with. Some people demand to be heard, especially if they think they're right in an argument. You let them go first, and then you can address whatever issues that they said that maybe were wrong by asking calibrated questions to kind of get them to where they might be in the right place with the situation. You know, we say calibrated questions are kind of like the Socratic method. You don't, like Socrates, that great philosopher, didn't answer any questions. He only answered questions with another question and led the person to the answer, and they felt like they got there by themselves. So it's a good tool to use if you have someone who's pouring out information, it's not exactly right. You can ask them certain questions to get them to where they are right by figuring it out in their own mind with that question prompt. As far as the difference between negotiations and trying to disarm or going through a debate, it can be kind of the same thing. In a negotiation, a lot of times what you're trying to do is kind of disarm the other side. So the skill use would be the same. You just have to concentrate on what you're trying to do, where you're going in this conversation or negotiation to figure out which skills are the best to use. And once again, I'm going to say, when in doubt, label it out, because there's nothing that does anything better than a great label, because you can make it into an asking label or a label that points out a dynamic, however that works, but it can be used pretty much in any situation. And Chris, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, there's a couple things. Victoria, I really like You sound to me like an assertive. I really like that. I like your desire to win when you said win the debate. But here's what I'd ask you to ask yourself to consider. Win the debate, win the battle, lose the war. If you win a debate, you're going to leave somebody stinging emotionally. You're going to leave somebody that wants to pay you back. There's my personal opinion. There's an old cliche that's wrong but close, because there's a lot of cliches out there that are attributed to genders or ages, which in fact are true of human beings, and it has nothing to do with gender. So the wrong cliche on arguing is there's two rules for arguing with a woman, and both of them are wrong. The truth is there's two rules for arguing with people, and both of them are wrong. And a debate is an argument, ideally with a better tone of voice. I don't think you can win long term. Winning a debate, I think you end up losing. You may win the point, you're going to lose long term. And I was probably very guilty of this before I really realized the effectiveness of tactical empathy in long term relationships, because as an assertive, I wanted to win all the time. And then I started finding myself losing long term. And I'm looking for other clues in it. And I would ask you to ask yourself to consider that winning a debate might cause you to lose long term.
I really appreciate that. And the reason why I was asking was much more because I was thinking of all the political debates that we've had recently, especially here in New York. And so I was wondering how in the political arena, when we're viewing debates, if there is a way that, you know, when we're listening to different people debating, if some of these skills can be used as opposed to, as you were saying, because I didn't think about it. It's true. You're having an argument. I wasn't really thinking about it that way. So I really appreciate it. So I was thinking much more about the formal debates. And I totally agree that winning for the sake of winning an argument is not the best place to go, or the best way to have a relationship. So I was just thinking about it in a more formal way, but you took it to a much more insightful area that's even more as equally important to consider. So thank you. I love your rooms and your information, and I look forward to your next show.
Thank you, Victoria. Shannon, I believe you have another question. I'll invite you up on the stage.
Thank you, Shay. Sandy, my question this time is, I'm curious to know if you have a strategy to deal with somebody that's an accommodator and they don't ever let you get a word in edgewise.
Wow, that's an interesting question. I don't, maybe it's because I'm assertive, but I don't really usually have a problem getting a word in at some point. I don't know. Maybe Chris, maybe you might have a different answer to this, but I feel like with accommodators, they're so about the relationship. And the only thing I'm very mindful of when dealing with an accommodator is that they want to please me in the moment. So anything that I ask for or want from them, they're going to say yes, 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 yes. And it might not actually be a true committed yes, because they want me to stay happy, and they're more about me being happy in the moment as opposed to long term. So I'm very careful about that.
Okay, I think I worded that incorrectly. I meant to say an assertive.
Oh, an assertive. Oh goodness. Sometimes with an assertive, you have to let them talk it out. As being an assertive and one who, if someone lets me go, I'm going to go. So wait till they take a breath. Encourage, use mirrors. Mirrors tend not to break people's train of thought. And usually when an assertive is talking, they do have to take a breath at some point. So if you hear a certain point or a certain thing that you want them to go in that direction, mirror that specific word or phrase with an upward inflection, and you're not interrupting them, and they're still going to go, and they're going to give you more information in that direction. The thing about dealing with an assertive, or really anyone, if they're talking and you're listening, you're getting more information, okay? You're not in control of the conversation just because you're the one doing all the talking. You're actually giving away more information. So listening will do better for you in the long run. So let them talk. That's what I've learned. I learned more by just listening to them, letting them talk, mirroring every now and then if I can get something in to send them in the direction I want them to go. And Chris, since you're assertive, maybe you want to tackle this one.
Yeah, thank you, Sandy. And after I answer this one, I'm gonna have to duck out. And forgive me for that. But yeah, I was gonna dead on with the mirrors. You know, assertives love mirrors. Assertives want to feel in control, and a mirror is a way to really guide them by mirroring selectively and guiding them all over the place. I mean, I think you probably know, as a historian, never split the difference about Keenan mirroring me and me not even knowing it until Brandon finally, and this was about 10 years ago, you know, Brandon said, "Oh my God, I can't take it anymore." He told me he was going to mirror you, and he's been doing it to you for the last 45 minutes and you didn't even notice. So yeah, mirroring works with assertives really good. And then also Keenan's got a naturally, you know, he's an analyst, so he's got that naturally tone of voice. It's not intrusive. You know, it's soothing and it's calming. So if you combine mirroring with experimenting with different tones of voice with an assertive, you can really steer them all over the place.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Shannon. I would just like to remind everyone, if you could follow Chris and Sandy and the rest of our instructors, you'll be able to receive exclusive alerts for upcoming Fireside Chats that we will be creating for Fireside. We have another question. Amber, would you be willing to come up on stage to read the question from Mira? I'll send you an invite.
And just before I duck out, if I could remind everyone, if you like what Sandy's talking about, and I certainly do, you know, share it out too. Tweet it out. Share it with the cool thing about this Fireside app is you can share stuff out simultaneously. Let people in your world know that you're getting value in the Black Swan Group's effort to raise the entire world by helping women get ahead, and then which helps everybody else, and through the Fab Five Skills for Women and the Women's Power Hour that Sandy does. Yeah, share this out as much as you possibly can. And with that, I will duck out. Sandy, thank you for allowing me to draft along with the experience with you.
Awesome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Chris. And also, we'll be having Chris's session tomorrow. So definitely tune in for that. Okay, Amber.
Okay, so Mira is on the Zoom call with me, and she asks, as an oil and gas engineer and an assertive, my comment on vulnerable is Brené Brown has normalized it. Does it help to bring in the vulnerability arsenal 10 minutes into the conversation and not at the beginning?
Okay, I'm going to give you the patented answer that we tend to give here at the Black Swan Group.
Okay.
It depends. I mean, honestly, you can't really put everything under a specific label because it really depends on the situation, what's happening, the dynamics of the conversation. As far as when you point out vulnerabilities, it's gonna depend on who you're dealing with and what effect that might have on them. If you're pointing out your own vulnerabilities, I would say use an accusations audit at the beginning and put that out there first. If you're trying to point out someone else's vulnerabilities, I would caution you on that one. If they give any kind of indication that they want you to notice that by what they're saying, then by all means label that. But if not, I would caution that.
Right. Okay. Mira, thanks you very much. And talk soon.
Awesome.
Thank you, Amber and Mira, for that question. Sandy, would you like to promote any upcoming courses you will be instructing and any other news for you?
Sure. So we do our Power Hour every other month. So the next Power Hour that we're going to have is going to be September 15th, and it's going to be noon Eastern time. So kind of figure that out where you are in the world, but it's going to be noon in my time zone, which is Washington, D.C., East Coast time. Also, we have a basics or applying tactical empathy class that's going to start July 27th that I'll be teaching, and Derek Gaunt's going to be with me riding shotgun. So we have that. That's an 8-week long class, 2 hours a week, extremely intensive, lots of exercises and things to do with that class. Also, there is an empowering women class, which I strongly encourage anyone to attend, any females to attend. Right now, it's not open to males. I'm sorry for those males that are here, but right now it's strictly for females. And it actually starts September 27th. I'm not sure. It's the end of September. And I think Chelsea's looking for a date for me, so I'll hold on for just a second for that. But they're all on our website. The empowering class for women is going to be 5 weeks long, 2 hours each session, and it's going to be really intensive with exercises. It's going to capitalize on those Fab Five skills for women and really work on doing exercises that apply to each one of the skills. And okay, thanks, Chelsea. It's going to be Wednesday, September 29th, and that's going to be starting at 1 o'clock Eastern time, and it's going to go for 2 hours for 5 weeks. So we would love it if any of you guys would be able to join us there. Please check the website. All of those things are actually up on the website already. So, and if you have any questions about that, feel free to fill out the info box on the website and someone from the Black Swan Group will get back to you to help you out with any questions that you have.
Yes, thanks for that, Sandy. And thank you all for tuning in to our session. Like I said, tomorrow we'll have the Black Swan Group CEO and founder, Chris Voss, on at 12 p.m. Eastern time. And the topic will be tips on how to achieve tactical empathy. So we'll go over helpful tips on how you can achieve tactical empathy to deal with the bad, the mad, the sad, and all types of situations that we encounter in our personal and professional lives. So be sure to follow Chris, follow Sandy, follow all of our instructors for any upcoming fireside chats. Also, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's the Black Swan Group, and we post new videos there every single week. So today we just dropped a video. So if you could check that out, we would gladly appreciate it. And you can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram for quick negotiation tips on the go. So if you're interested, definitely tune in tomorrow with Chris and the rest of the week for our future fireside chats. All of Sandy's courses will be listed on our social media pages. So if you're interested in taking a course from Sandy, just check out our Facebook or our LinkedIn pages. We always have the most updated information on there. And thank you all for joining and continue to practice your negotiation skills.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.